In just 3 short days, Saturday, April 15th, will mark 200 years since the first American school for deaf education was founded by Thomas Gallaudet in Hartford, Connecticut. Deaf education and deaf culture in general have come a very long way since then, and here to discuss its development with me today is Pierce Professor Christine Hall. I'm your host, Jira Nakash, and thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Kultur, the show where we tour the different cultures Pierce's population has to offer and discuss what makes each cultural makeup unique. Today is Wednesday, April 12th. It is 3:08 p.m., and you're listening to kpcradio.com. So, as I mentioned earlier, Christine is a professor here at Pierce. She teaches deaf culture and American Sign Language and is a deaf woman. I am learning American Sign Language this semester, but unfortunately I'm nowhere near fluent enough to conduct this interview in sign language. So in the next half hour, I hope so. So in the next half hour, I'll be asking Christine questions and speaking with her directly. And here to help us communicate by interpreting the back and forth exchange is interpreter Ellen. And I want to point out that although you'll be hearing Ellen's voice, it's important to note that these are Christine's opinions and answers to my questions. So thank you both much for being here today. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure.
So Christine, were you born deaf?
Yes, I was. My parents are also deaf. I'm second generation. I have two deaf sisters and two deaf brothers and one deaf sister and one hearing sister.
So one hearing sister out of five of you, I think, five siblings?
Right. One of us is hearing.
Wow. Okay. So American Sign Language was your first language, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And how did you learn English?
School. I went to school. My parents, we read English, and my parents would sign the stories so I could connect the English with the ASL.
Okay. So I know it's slightly different. A deaf person learning English is different from a hearing person learning English because of the sound. You don't hear the sound of the letters. So what I was wondering is, were you taught what sounds the different letters make, or is that irrelevant to you? Or how do you learn such a thing if that's relevant?
It was not relevant. it was important that I learned to read and write it, but speaking it was not important.
Okay, that makes sense to me. When did you decide to become an ASL teacher and start teaching about deaf culture?
My parents are teachers. I grew up not wanting to be a teacher. I actually have, one of my brothers is deaf and autistic. I love teaching them to ride a bike and to swim, and I just love that, but I did not want to be like my parents. I wanted to help people and work with people and find my passion, right? So I went to Gallaudet University. It's in D.C. It's the only deaf university in the world. And I studied communications. Then I moved to California, and I got a job as a teacher's aide. And I thought, I want to be a teacher.
So despite saying that you didn't want to be like your parents, when you actually tried it out, you figured out that it was something you liked.
You know, our parents are always right, aren't they?
I mean, I don't want to admit that yet, but if you say so, I'm just kidding. Okay, so there's...
My sister's also a teacher.
Oh.
Yeah. My younger brother is a teacher as well.
What number are you in the five? There's five of you, correct?
I was the firstborn.
You're the
number
oldest.
Number one.
Me too.
All right.
The best.
The next two are actually twins. The boy is deaf and has autism, David. And my sister, Julie, teaches at Gallaudet University.
Oh.
And she has a doctorate. I'm so proud of her. My next sister is a coda, which is a child of a deaf adult. She's hearing. And our baby brother's a teacher as well. He's teaching in D.C.
Wow. So. Well, you have a very large family. That's amazing. I have three siblings. There's four of us. And whenever I say that, people are like, wow, that's so many siblings, but you have me beat.
That's right.
So you decided to become an ASL teacher once you tried it out. Why do you find that most people enroll in your classes? Is it usually to fulfill a requirement, to learn more about someone they know, curiosity, general interest? What do you think is the primary reason?
Okay. You asked why I became a teacher. As I said, I was a teacher's aide, and then I became a teacher at North Valley Occupational Center, which is working with deaf adults. I love that job. These are people who grew up not getting the love they need, the communication they need from their families. And that job really gave me a sense of a maternal sense, and I really loved working with these deaf adults. And then this idea of teaching ASL came up. I wasn't sure about it. I took a workshop on it and I fell in love. And I love teaching ASL. And, you know, the language is so beautiful. It's 3D. And I love just watching kids learn and the understanding come about. And, you know, some people are more visual learners, right? And some love it so much they become interpreters or they get involved with the deaf community. We need allies anywhere we can get them. And I just love teaching. It's watching people learn and understand, and they're my family. They become my family.
And I can understand that. I mean, you said that you learned at Gallaudet University, which is a deaf university, but we are at Pierce, which is not a deaf university, even though there is a solid deaf community. You're not the only deaf teacher on campus, and there is several, I think there's awareness, I would say, among the students, at least part of the student body. And so people are usually surprised when I say that I have a deaf teacher. I'm taught by your colleague, Stephanie. Are people usually surprised when they find out that you're deaf, a deaf instructor?
Well, deaf people are supposed to be teaching our language. I'm a native signer. You want a native signer to teach the language you want to learn, right? So, but as you mentioned, Gallaudet, they actually accept hearing students. They offer an interpreting major. Some of the students, you have to know sign language to get to go to Gallaudet. Some are CODAs, right? They have deaf.
Like your sister.
They have deaf parents, and it's just such a wonderful experience. I love, and my students, some of them have gone on to Gallaudet. That is so exciting to me. And Pierce does have some deaf students, and some of them struggle with their identity. They tell me they wish they weren't deaf because their parents don't really accept them. They're not learning sign language. They're not communicating at home. But then they meet me, and they meet Stephanie Zornoza, who you mentioned, and they're inspired, and they learn they can do more than they thought, and they get motivated, and they start socializing with other deaf students and students learning sign language, and I love seeing that pride develop. And I just want to be clear that I'm a very proud deaf woman. I do not want to be hearing. You give me a pill to make me hearing, it's going to be crushed and on the ground. I love who I am.
Perfect. Okay, that was actually going to be a question that I had a little bit later, because it's interesting.
I read your mind.
You really did. You read my mind. I think that it's an interesting question. It comes up often because people, I think, maybe are unaware of. I mean, I don't like using this word, but the benefits or disadvantages each part of it of being a certain person, whether that's deaf or whatever else it is that's part of your identity. But walk me through that process. If you're a deaf instructor, and I mean, I have a deaf instructor, so I kind of know, but for our listeners, how do you get a class started when nobody else is deaf and you are? How do you teach where there's that barrier in between you?
It's not about deafness. It's a learning environment. So there's a lot of activity. I include the students in projects that they have to walk around the room and really the first day of class, honestly, the first day of class, We do have an interpreter. We go over ground rules and all that. And I emphasize that this is a family. We will become a close family by the end of the semester. And many of them on that first day think, oh, what is she talking about? I just want to learn. But by the end of class, they understand what I meant, because we are family.
That's something that I've felt, too, in my class. And so I completely know what you're talking about. You can't help but connect to the other people in the room because it's an unusual way of learning. It's not something typical. But one of the things that I was fascinated by is how Stephanie, my deaf instructor, communicated with us. It takes a lot of creativity.
Yes. I love her.
I love her as well. It's a great, great, great class. But of the available methods in terms of communication, which do you prefer when you're communicating with a hearing person?
Gesture. You know, I love the gesturing. And, you know, I never learned to lip read or to speak. It's not important to me. It's not part of my language. So people sometimes are a little taken aback, but many people gesture, and once you get over the fact that someone deaf, they can understand, right? And, you know, an interpreter is great, but I bet next semester we won't need the interpreter.
And that's what I was going to say, is usually when I will tell my friends that I'm learning ASL with a deaf woman, they'll say, oh, there's an interpreter there, right? And I tell them, no, it was only in the first two classes. Or when she wants to explain something more complex that isn't, you know, in video form, or you know, you can't express it adequately with gesturing because there is a language barrier. It's fascinating to me, is seeing the different ways that you can communicate when it's not direct and verbal. But something I'm curious about is how you feel about the lack of privacy in your conversations. Or maybe you don't see it that way, but when you talk to someone with an interpreter, you're exposing potentially private or sensitive information to a whole other person, and maybe you don't always know them as well as you might know Ellen, because you and Ellen work together, right?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Yeah, and we're actually good friends. But on the job, interpreters follow a code of conduct, code of ethics. I respect her. She respects me. We understand each other's role and where the line is. But we work as a team, a good team. And in this situation, hi, Radio World. If you're interested in becoming an interpreter, it's all about learning the language and practicing. And there is, as I mentioned, this code of conduct includes confidentiality. Interpreters can lose their job if they mention anything they learned on a job.
Okay.
And I trust interpreters. You know, I understand they understand this code of ethics.
So you're not worried about an intrusion of privacy? You don't prefer, let's say, a written interaction?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
Good. Okay, so that was the question.
I'm trying to think. Do I even have any secrets? I don't have secrets.
Well, that's a different thing. You're a very open person. I know a lot of people are more private. They maybe prefer not to put it all out on the table. But the first time that we met, I scared you pretty badly, unintentionally.
Really? Tell me.
I'll set up the situation for our listeners. I walked into your office to meet you. And you had your back to the door, and you were focused on something on your computer pretty intensely. And I tried knocking on your desk to get your attention, and when that didn't work, I tapped on your shoulder. And you just jumped, and I felt so bad. I'm so sorry about that. It's so embarrassing.
Please don't. And that's who I am. I'm so intent on what I'm doing that you touched my shoulder and I forgot I was in a world where there were other people. Stephanie's aware of this. She comes in and is very afraid of startling me, but it's not a big deal. Do you feel better?
I feel better, but I did want to ask, what are some better ways to get your attention? Or not just yours, if there's a deaf person and they're turned around, tapping the shoulder would be good?
Yeah, tapping the shoulder or going around so they can see you in their peripheral vision. Knocking on the door isn't good. Knocking on a table may not work. lights, flashing the light switch. And I will say, if my door's open, it means I'm expecting anybody to come in. But at that moment, I was so focused on what I was doing.
Okay, so it's not that I could have done something differently in the situation necessarily. You were just very into whatever it is that you were doing. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay, good. So I do feel better now.
Good.
And I'll know for next time. But I know that there's a bunch of different rules for deaf etiquette, and there are some pretty standard do's and don'ts. And one of them is not to stare at two people who are signing a conversation, even if you don't know any sign language, and it's just because you may think it looks cool.
Okay, let me just say that young children, we give them different privileges. And cute boys, I'm cool with that too. No. But you're right, it's rude to stare. You know, we think, what are they thinking? Are they thinking, oh, those poor deaf people? Or, you know, it's distracting. And I don't, you know, but I will say the awareness today, social media has exposed people to deafness. Things are different now than they were years ago. But I'll tell you what I can't stand. When I'm talking with someone and a third person comes up and bends down and tries to sneak under this, it's very disconcerting. Just walk through us. It's no big deal.
Right. And so what are some other respect rules in deaf culture? Some other things, if walking through is one of them. What else would you expect?
What's not respectful is when people say, oh, do you read lips? If they come up and say, oh, I'm learning sign language, that I feel respected and I can offer the respect back. But when people write off, ask me about hearing aids and can I read lips, I feel offended.
Why is that?
Well, why would you ask me if I could lip read?
So I knew, before I joined Stephanie's class, and this is something misleading, I thought that that was something that people were taught. So not everybody knows that that's not something, or they don't know how difficult it is. What Stephanie did, and I remember this, she stood at the front of the class, and she mouthed a sentence. And she said, what did you get from that? And none of us had gotten anything, of course. It's very difficult. But you don't realize how hard it is. Or you don't realize that that's not something that someone can do naturally until someone says it to you.
Right. Right. You're right, people, we just aren't educated about everything out there. And that's one of those things I wish more people were aware of. You know, the way we respect one another is to understand their culture. And lip reading isn't part of our culture, but the language is.
Okay, that makes total sense. I mean, that's respecting other people's cultures is exactly what my show is about. It's exposing people to the different ways that people live, the different lifestyles that people are a part of. So as someone who interacts regularly with both cultures, with hearing and deaf culture, what do you think, other than the ability to hear, what do you think the most glaring difference is between the two cultures?
You know, I just want to be clear that I grew up in this deaf family. I went to school for the deaf up in Fremont, Northern California. It's a residential school. My parents taught there. I think there was one hearing person in my life, and that was a neighbor. After high school, I went to Gallaudet University. And then I came to California, and I took a class. And I had an interpreter in my class, the first time ever. And that was my real exposure to the hearing world. And it was challenging. It was really difficult. I didn't care for the interpreter. It was not Ellen. And she says, thank you. the interpreter, I really felt like didn't sign clearly, wasn't respectful to the deaf community. And you know, I'm from, let's just say, the royal family, right? Because everyone's deaf. And so after 22 years I'm exposed to this hearing world, it was unsettling. And I realized I had to become an advocate for my community. Well, let me tell you, I do have two children. They are hearing, and that is a huge challenge. We moved to Valencia because they're very family-oriented, and the schools are good out there. My one daughter wanted to be a cheerleader, and I would go watch her. There'd be 20 other mothers all clapping and being encouraging, and, you know, it was a challenge for me because I didn't know what was going on. And one mother said, "I know sign language," and that was it. We were best friends instantly. And all the other mothers were like, "What are you saying over there? What are you saying?" But, I mean, that was a nice moment for me. There's, you know, when you share the same culture with someone, there's an instant sense of family. Let me give an example. I went to Europe all by myself. I went backpacking. I didn't know anyone. And I saw some people signing. And I ran to them. I said, "Hi, I'm deaf." And they said, "Oh, come to our home. We'll show you around." And it was instant connection, instant family.
And did they know ASL, or were they speaking, you know, gesturing?
We gestured. It was in France, so no, they spoke what we call LSF.
Right.
So French Sign Language.
Right.
But I didn't know who they were, but I was able to go up and say hello, and they welcomed me instantly.
It's, I think, something, and maybe this is something that people don't realize, when you are part of a culture, and it doesn't matter if that culture doesn't belong to a specific country, you automatically connect with other people who are part of it. I'm Israeli, and so whenever I hear someone speaking Hebrew, I feel an automatic connection to them. It doesn't matter when I met them or where they were from.
Right, exactly.
So I have a few more minutes, but I have a question. I was, music and deaf culture is something that's fascinating to me. I came across a video on Facebook recently of an ASL.
I hate music. I hate it. I hate people who sign. I mean, I hate when people sign songs. You know, it's just not my thing. There's no, it's our language. So when hearing people sign songs, I feel like they're stealing our language. And yes, there's some deaf people who like music, and that's their thing, and that's fine. And if they want to sign songs, I'm all in support of that. But I am deaf. I don't hear any. Music means nothing to my world.
This video that I saw, and this is what I wanted to ask you about, it was a woman who, her job is to interpret the songs and not just translate the words. Her name is Amber Galloway Gallego. And she, instead of just signing the music...
Oh, she's a coda. She is... Her parents are deaf.
Right. And instead of just signing the music, she signs the words with the same emotion and expressiveness and meaning as they're played in. So what do you think of that method?
I've never seen one. Again, I don't enjoy music. It doesn't relate to me as a deaf person. But I've heard she's very good.
Okay, so you have heard of her. She's someone familiar in the deaf community?
Oh, yes.
Wonderful. Okay. So I just want to, you know, to wrap up, I want to know, what do you think that most people assume about deaf people that's just flat out wrong?
That we can talk.
Do you get asked that a lot?
Too often. How do you live? You poor thing, you can't hear. Why don't you get a cochlear implant or a hearing aid? No, it's not what I want to be. You know, I don't want to be a hearing person. This is who I am. I was born into the deaf world. I am deaf. Why would I want to be different?
And that's a topic I didn't even get to touch, the cochlear implant. I wanted to talk about that, but we don't have much time left, so I want to That's a whole nother show. We'll talk about it a different
okay,
time.
Okay, invite me back, please.
I would love to. One thing that I think, tell me one thing you think most people don't know about deaf culture that you think they ought to know.
You know what? Just take an ASL class and you'll learn. Take an ASL class, everybody.
So that's what you would recommend for people who know little to nothing about deaf culture in order for them to learn more. And you teach ASL and you teach deaf culture, correct?
I do, yes. I have a funny story, if I may. On April 15th, we're having a fundraiser. It's celebrating the 200th year of the American School for the Deaf. You know who Tom Hanks is, yes?
Of course.
Turns out he's a friend of mine. And he signed on a hashtag, on an Instagram, he signed, support deaf children. And the whole community is just, you know, falling in love with him. Tom Hanks rocks.
So will he be doing something on Saturday to commemorate the day?
Sadly, no.
Thought you were going to tell me he's coming here, he's going to help, he's going to show up.
No, he just signed support deaf children. So
very interesting. I'm a big Tom Hanks fan, and now even more so. So that just barely scratched the surface of deaf culture, but hopefully anyone listening was able to learn a little bit more about our topic. And I told you before that I plan on transcribing this so you can send it to friends, family that are deaf, can't be listening in, but they can read about it. So
please take my deaf culture class. It is a lecture class. There is an interpreter, so you won't miss anything. And who knows, maybe you'll find similarities between your culture and deaf culture.
And you're teaching it over the summer or next semester? When can they sign up for it?
It's offered in the spring and fall only.
Okay, spring and fall. So for anyone listening who's interested in learning more. And until then, thank you so much, Christine, for joining our program and enlightening us. Tune in next Wednesday to tour a different culture that exists right here as part of Pierce's campus. Thank you for listening to Cool Tour. From KPCRadio.com, I'm Sheer Nakash.